I don't know. That's just what pedestrian, average, mediocre receivers do. What's up? What's up? My man Deion Sanders, we all right, huh? We all right? Yeah, we all right. We gonna go to the Super Bowl again, being all right.
You're listening to the Pedestrian Podcast, the official UK podcast for the Seattle Seahawks. Here are your hosts, Ross Bell, Stuart Court, and Adam Nathan. Go Hawks!
Hello and welcome to the Pedestrian Podcast, the official podcast for UK Seahawkers, episode 11. This week is a bit different with Mr. Ross Bell, MIA, with family commitments. So it's a bigger dose of everyone's favourite, Adam Nathan. How are we, sir?
Not too bad. I had a bit of a stressful day on Football Manager today, but nothing about the Nathan Man Management magic can't sort. You know, you just don't need that on a Thursday. I think we're through our problems in there. Aston Villa are on the march again.
Oh, God. What did you pick that lot for? Joining the fold to cover for Ross is Sean Wilson. For those of you who aren't aware of who he is, he is the chapter president for the UK Seahawkers. How are we, Sean?
I'm very good, thank you. How are we, chaps?
Not too bad. This week we will focus in on the Week 6 matchup against the Falcons this coming Sunday evening, as the impressive Falcons are in town already and looking to make it a big time statement 3 weeks in a row. We will also dig into a bag of chatter around the NFL with another couple true or false questions. First, a few bye week Seahawks notes. Cliff Averill, who has done a ton of humanitarian work in the country, has pledged to donate money to build a house in Haiti after destruction caused in last week by Hurricane Matthew. Averill says every time he gets a sack for the rest of the season, money will be donated towards that cause. After the stances taken a few weeks ago by Doug Baldwin and Richard Sherman on police and the player protests, it's another note of being proud to have someone like number 56 on the Seahawks, isn't it, Adam?
Yeah, it's really cool. And with a bit of luck, by the end of the season, he'll have basically made Haiti into the new New York.
Sean?
Yeah, I would imagine the people of Haiti, if they know anything about the game, should be expecting a whole new conurbation. Mm-hmm. I think it's now that time of the season when Cliff really starts to get going, and I'm hoping he starts to get the plays that somebody of his talent deserves.
Yeah, most definitely. And let's just hope the rest of the season brings him the Michael Strahan sack record and all that, and it's Case Keenum lying down for him in week 16 instead of Brett Favre did for Strahan. Some former Seahawk news sees tight end Cooper Halfitt, now seemingly healthy, join the Raiders practice squad. Linebacker safety Eric Pinkins is signed to the Giants squad. Simultaneously, Pinkins is frustrated as he seems to be well set to be behind Cassius Marsh and Mike Morgan, but that 10th defensive back was always going to be needed, wasn't it, Adam?
Crucial position on the roster. Everyone knows that.
With no Seahawks game this week, there is just one other note that is not so much Seahawks related, but more Seattle based. The Washington Huskies put 70 on the Oregon Ducks and are still the fifth ranked team in the nation. That was a fun Sunday evening, wasn't it, Sean?
I think I went out, or I was washing my hair, or something like that. I'm not quite sure what you're referring to. I'm sure Adam will expand in due course.
Can Oregon fans even count to 70?
only if it's a family get together and led to believe.
So we covered a bit with Gavin a few weeks ago and ourselves at the start of this podcast run. So Sean, do you want to give a brief background into how you became a 12 and why?
Oh, now, there's a thing. Bit of memory required here. I saw my first NFL game going back to, I think it was 1981, which would have been a Bengals 49ers Super Bowl. And again, at that time, I would have been 13 years old, and it was probably a 10 minute slot on the old World of Sport on ITV at the time. Crazy. What the hell is this game? Didn't know anything about it. And lo and behold, it was exactly the same two teams in the Super Bowl the following year. And at that time, clearly because of my age, the internet was not really a thing of endless knowledge at that time. So it meant doing a little bit of manual work down the library. And the Channel 4 programme started again in 84, 85, I think, from memory. And various magazines also came out at the same time. So that was probably the first real push of the NFL in the UK, I guess, and that's where I started. I watched it with my dad and haven't really stopped ever since.
No, so obviously the last few years we've been going to Seattle. What's that experience has been like for people who haven't been?
It's a tremendous event, and I really would call it an event. The first time that that I travelled over with a pal of mine, Mark Jackson, and bumped into you guys, funnily enough, it was supposedly a trip of a lifetime, and it was something that we talked about doing for many years. Mark had worked previously over in Seattle for a period of time, so we talked about it, and we really just took the plunge and decided to do it. And lo and behold, we've been back every year since. It's that sort of environment. The locals are incredible people, incredibly welcoming, and it feels as close to family as I think that you could probably ever wish to have in your own family from a natural birthright. It's an incredible experience, and I feel very privileged to have been able to do that and continue to do it.
And to meet me and Adam along the way, obviously.
Goes without saying. Absolutely goes without saying.
I'll never forget the sight of this just thing of hair walking into the bar. I was thinking, is that the bloke I've seen on Facebook?
I think that's a little unkind to Mark.
I'm definitely never going to get mates with him.
I think, if you don't mind me saying so.
Maybe. But I remember seeing on Facebook through the UK Seahawks group thinking, oh, this bloke Sean Wilson's going out there. Not sure I mix with him too much. All of a sudden... I've tasted your chili in your own home. Who would have thought?
Well, that's one of the phrases I didn't expect to hear today.
It's a family show, Sean, if you wouldn't mind keeping it.
Right, now this week there are possibly a few more people listening to see how they will be spending their game day in a month's time before the Bills Monday night game, as Sean is about to draw, is it four names, Sean?
Yeah, we've been very lucky this year. Central Committee have allocated us four field passes for the Bills game. As far as I'm aware, every other chapter has only ever received or will only receive two for the other home game. So whether we're privileged, whether we have some special treatment for once, I don't know. But let's enjoy it because it's not being afforded to everybody.
Yeah, so for those who don't know, what does the field pass entail?
The field pass basically allows you to enter the stadium and access the sidelines next to the pitch during things like warm-ups where you'll see all the players coming out an hour and a half before the game, going through all their pre-game routines and exercises, etc. So it's a real opportunity to get close up to the players. And I think, having never done this myself either, I think that's when you'll get a real scale for the size of these guys, or certainly some of the guys on both teams. So, it's very much a minority in terms of people that have been able to do this. So I think it's something that will be well received by whoever the lucky recipients are.
Yeah. So all this, as I said, there's 23, I think it is, Brits and Europeans making the voyage over to Seattle for the Bills game on the 7th of November. Sean, it's all yours. Draw away.
Absolutely correct. Some people have in the past been lucky enough to have the field passes. They've given up their opportunity to do this again, which is fantastic, and I applaud them. And there's also a couple of people, because of timings, that have said that they really wouldn't want to, again, take up the opportunity. So we've got 13 people, and four of which will be able to take advantage of this. So in the finest Eurovision-type draw that I can think of, the first, and I must admit, I am in this draw, so before it starts, I'm going to be completely impartial unless my name comes out.
I mean, you can already smell a stitch-up.
So, here we go. I really should be videoing this, shouldn't I, to show complete impartiality. The first name...
Today's newspaper in front of you as well.
Well, the first name out is Tom Harris. So, congratulations to you, Tom. The second name... Oh, my word. Yes, is Sean Wilson. let's talk about that later.
Put it back.
The second name out is Michael Yates. Third name out is, to my knowledge, the only Frenchman in the group, one Cedric O'Shea. And last but not least,
Sean Wilson.
It couldn't possibly be twice. That would be so. It's a certain Mr. Mark Jackson. So there we have it. Michael Yates, Tom Harris, Cedric O'Shea, and Mark Jackson. I'm more than happy to give that up.
Congrats to those four. That's more fireball for us, like, though. Hey, Adam.
That's true, yeah. That is very, very true.
Thanks for the opportunity for doing that, guys.
No worries. In the lead up to the game for the podcast, we have booked, I think, that is a quite show busy term, I think. A pretty cool guest for the pod in the lead up to the Bills, so keep an eye out for that.
Atlanta coming with everybody. Wilson just going to throw a fade to Tate. One handed stab. Touchdown! Play action fake. Wide open. And an easy touchdown to Zach Miller. And don't look now. Here come the Seahawks.
Now on to week 6 preview, and it should be a fun one. The Falcons are already in town using the facilities of the number 5 ranked Oregon Decimators, Washington Huskies. They come in on the back of shutting down and scaring any semblance of talent out of Paxton Lynch this past Sunday, and that came after a 500-yard, 300-yard day for Matt Ryan and Julio Jones saw them absolutely embarrass the Carolina Panthers and cost Bene Wickery his job. But now they head to Seattle, and this won't be easy, will it, Adam?
No, I mean, it's not going to be easy for either side, but it's quite hard to evaluate the Falcons. You know, it'd be folly to suggest they're not a good side, because they clearly are, but what you were really hoping for is to see them have a much tougher go of it on defense as they had on Sunday, because Paxton Lynch just looked no match for Dan Quinn. It was a complete mismatch. So it was quite hard to evaluate them on a defensive side from what we saw on Sunday. But offensively, they looked great.
Yeah. I think with Paxton Lynch, I think he threw the ball over 50 times. And to do that in your first game is a lot, is a real lot to ask. So it is tough to gauge, because they just overwhelm him in the second half. But looking back a week, we touched on it last week a bit, the Carolina game and how they looked then. They rattled Cam, didn't they? Just as much as they rattled Lynch.
Yeah, I mean, Newton doesn't look 100% right at the moment. But, you know, it's tricky, because they've been in games that Seattle aren't really... That Carolina game is not typically a game you see out of Seattle with, you know, big points on both sides, especially in the fourth quarter. So, I don't know, like, the common sense would suggest that we're in for a really tough game of it on Sunday. I'm optimistic, because I think I know what Matt Ryan is, but maybe I'm wrong, and it could be a belter.
He's a quarterback, for those who do not know. Sean, it's not going to be an easy ride on Sunday, is it?
No, I wouldn't disagree with anything that's being said. Although, I have to say, I would suggest that the Falcons probably haven't seen anything like us if we're anything on our game as well. That's going to be a huge test. I don't think there's any doubt that we, if we're going to come away with the win, are going to have to be at our best on both sides of the ball. With the defence, it's become what's expected. It's the norm. It's what we do. If they maintain the standard of the team so far, great. It just means that if we can put points up, then I think we will certainly come out with a very important win to take us to 4-1.
Yeah, most definitely. One of the big things was touched on yesterday with yesterday's press conferences with Carroll and Sherman is the matchup nightmare that is Julio Jones. He's possibly the best Alabama product in recent memory, who is a high draft pick, and he's just continued to rise and rise. He raised the game when Matt Ryan struggled the last couple of years, and he's the 300-yard game. I think there's only 4 or 5 other players have done it. Who do you see matching up with Adam on Sunday?
It's tricky. I mean, I sort of hope that there isn't this idea that Sherman has anything to prove by going against Julio Jones, because I personally think that you know, what do I know? But if I was making a game plan, I would be more than happy for Sherman to stay on the left as he is. And if Julio Jones on the right-hand side, I think Deshaun Shedd, from a physical perspective, is pretty well matched with Julio if he has some safety help. So as long as there's not this, you know, a bit of male bravado coming into it where, you know, which I don't think there will be, but by Sherman thinking he has to show it up against a big guy, I like our system, and I trust our system to work, as opposed to making it, you know, a 1v1 matchup for 60 snaps.
Yeah, I think I agree that. I think the last 4 or 5 weeks of the season, I think Deshaun Shedd and Jeremy Lane, obviously, to a lesser extent, with where Julio lines up most often, they've shown that there's no reason not to trust them, even with someone of the ability that Julio Jones brings. But it is sounding like that Sherman will be the one who tracks him for most of the game. Sean, what would you do with Julio?
Well, I think I'm with Adam on this. I think that Shedd is proving to be much more than competent and a much better player than I thought he would be, to be fair. Sherman is what he is. I think whichever side that Jones lines up on, I think we can cover that. However, I think this is possibly Earl Thomas's biggest game of the season, because he will have huge amounts of ground to cover, which he's more than capable of. And I think he could potentially be the difference in the Legion for us as a team.
Yeah, I think this is, if we're going to be tested deep, as we've said a couple of weeks ago, last couple of weeks on the podcast, if we're going to be tested with deep balls, this is the week it's going to be, because they just gun it downfield with Kyle Shanahan and everything. Obviously, getting the ball to Julio will be helped by Matt Ryan staying upright. How do we make sure that's not the case? Obviously, Mike Morgan is out for the foreseeable. Frank Clark was on the injury report yesterday with a hamstring injury, which is a bit of concern. The pass rush really has to dial it up this week, doesn't it, Adam?
Yeah, I mean, we're going to have to bring the heat quite severely. I mean, if you offered me Atlanta getting 20, which is what they got last Sunday, I think I would take that for sure, because I certainly back us to score more than that. But to be honest, they just create huge mismatch or matchup issues with on Sunday by lining up running backs against linebackers. And whilst I absolutely love KJ Wright, in pass protection against quick players, he slightly worries me. So I think, you know, as I say, I don't really know what the best way is to close down an offense entirely. Thankfully, there's people that get paid more money and much more intelligent than me that get to work that out. Otherwise, we'd be in deep something. But yeah, ultimately, the less time we give Matt Ryan to throw, you would suggest the better off we're going to be, certainly on the deep threat.
Yeah, most definitely. Sean?
Yeah, again, completely agree. I think if I've just said that Earl has possibly got the biggest thing to prove on the field, I think Chris Richard has got a real statement to make, going up an offence that is going to throw it against us. They are going to look long to stretch the field, and I think he has to set the tone relatively early. He has to get into Matt Ryan's head as quickly as possible. If we do that, then it can only help us. The pass rush is, I would say, not been as effective as we'd hope. Maybe this is the game where he gives them a little bit more rope, lets the lead off a little, and says, "Go get the guy."
Yeah, because Matty Ice is what he's been dubbed since he came into the league, and he mounts on occasion, and he only does that when you've got 4 or 5 bodies around him. So, yeah. There's a lot of pressure on Chris Richard. Talking of defensive coordinators, the guy that Chris Richard replaced a few years ago is Dan Quinn, and he'll be on the opposite sideline this Sunday. Is his pass with the team and Pete Carroll for the two stops he had in Seattle, is that anything of note, Adam, or just something to fill NFL Network and ESPN previews?
I think, as I saw an article say today, he's a guy that you want to have a really career because he's done a lot of good things for the city and the team. But that great career can go up to Saturday and it can start up again on Monday because Sunday it's been taken down.
Yeah. It will be interesting because I think, you watch the Falcons, especially this year when he's obviously got his messages starting to get through. that it looks more like he's got more the Seahawks players he had. Obviously, he's got Vic Beasley, you can easily see him wearing 51 the last few years in Seattle. He's got Keanu Neal, who's just a thumper in the middle of the secondary. And he's got Deion Jones, who just sideline to sideline and just absolutely lays out people as well. So, and then he's got Trufant as well with Sherman, and then he's got the grabby corner on the other end with Alford. So he's got the Brandon Browner as well. So everything is looking very Seahawkish in Atlanta early doors of the season. But I think I agree. So I hope he does well just for 364 days this year, just not on Sunday. Sean.
Yeah, I think it's absolutely fair comment. I think if there's ever a team that's tried to replicate us and what we do, it's probably this team that Dan Quinn has put together. But I think it's actually this year when it's actually sort of meshed. I suppose for him, it's like any other ex-employee going to play against their ex-employer. I think it's going to be a hell of a game. I think it's going to be a hell of a spectacle. As Adam mentioned earlier, you know, we don't often get involved in shootouts. I've got a horrible feeling this might just turn into one.
Yeah, it is striking me as a bit like the Steelers game it ended up being last year, when it was just long ball after long ball, and thankfully we outlasted them. So hopefully that happens on Sunday. So with all that, Adam, one to watch on offense for the Seahawks.
I have often dubbed this guy as good at football, and I think he will continue to prove this on Sunday, because one thing that you said, that the Falcons are starting to look quite Seahawky. They certainly look Seahawky in the way they cover tight ends, aka they do not. Greg Olsen was just running wherever he wanted to a couple of weeks ago. I really think he's tight end or receiver entirely to have 300-yard games.
I think it's all receiver. The last one to do it was Corin Williams, I think it was, before Jimmy the last two games. Yeah, I think the Jimmy matchup is interesting, although I think if Greg Olsen does, Jimmy's pretty close to him, well, better than him for the most part. Sean, one to watch on offense for the Seahawks?
Well, if our modern-day savant is absolutely correct, I would expect a certain Mr. Doug Baldwin to find lots of room in and around just at the line of scrimmage. I think it's Doug. I think this is going to be a Doug sort of game. We stretch it, we move around, and then all the gap, after the second half adjustments to play, Doug becomes the match winner.
So it's a bit like the Steelers game last year.
I have a feeling, I can see it. Unless something happens in the game to change that possible flow. But I think Doug is going to have a huge say on where we go with this.
Yeah.
I mean, to be honest, it's the sort of game where if we get any lead at all, you don't really want to be throwing huge, you know, a touchdown's always great, but I'd rather score a touchdown in 7 minutes than 2 minutes on Sunday. I'd rather see Doug picking up third down, because the less time you can have their offense out on the field, the more chance of winning.
You're absolutely right, Adam. I think one factor is who has the ball the most in this game.
Yeah, talking, keep running down the clock and stuff, for me, the one to watch is getting the running game going. As impressive as good as Christian Michael's looked, the yardage totals and how effective the run game has been is not as it has been, obviously, the last few years with Marshawn Lynch and last year with Thomas Rawls. It's not looked the same. It's not been as successful. Obviously, we still won in New Jersey by throwing the ball and Jimmy Graham and Doug and Tanner McAvoy and all the rest of it. But I think getting the running game going is massive on Sunday, because they have probably the best 1-2 punch at the position in the league, in Devonta Freeman and Tevin Coleman. And going toe-to-toe with that running game and in that yardage total will be really important come Sunday. Elsewhere for me, I think I am really looking forward to seeing Nick Vinette. I think he could help out Gary Gilliam for an extra protection against Vic Beasley and Grady Jarrett, if they ever fling him out up against Gilliam. And obviously the CJ Prozois, if he plays, although it's starting to look like he won't. Again this week, Adam.
Yeah, I've seen quite a few guys on the Twitter sphere saying that they wouldn't be too surprised if Soros actually line up with three tight ends, with Wilson and Vinette helping out on the blocking, and Graham lining up basically as a wide receiver. And I think that would be very wise, certain to start the game.
Yeah.
Is that the jumbo package, Adam, by any chance?
course, Jumbo, Whopper, whatever. Whatever acronym you want to, not acronym, what word you want to put with it. Yeah, it's Jumbo. It's A380, I think.
So, yeah, flipping the side to your side of the ball. Sean, one to watch on defence for Seahawks.
Well, I've actually got two, and I think it depends on whether Atlanta have any success with the run or not. I'd be hugely surprised because I think they're really effective. To stop that, there is a question mark whether Jaron Reed is going to play or not. If he plays, he's going to be really good. Michael Bennett hasn't had the game yet for me. And again, I think he will be an influence within this game only because Chris Richard has got to get after the quarterback. And I think Michael Bennett is the guy to do that.
Yeah. I think with Bennett, I think he's like Earl Thomas to a certain extent, he's doing things without showing up on the stat sheet to a certain extent. He's opening lanes up for Bobby Wagner to come through and Frank Clark, especially against the Rams a few weeks ago. But yeah, it would be good to see one of those, the big names as we got on the defence, really step up on Sunday. Adam, one to watch on defence?
It's a bit annoying. You know how I've answered all the questions first and Sean said, yeah, I agree with Adam. Well, if we can get back to that, that'd be quite handy because I had Jaron Reed saved as my one to watch. That's a bit annoying. But to sort of add to that, I do feel that we definitely have to stop any runs up the gut because if we open that up and they can pass to Coleman and Freeman and they can go deep, then we have severe problems. So those guys are very important. But, you know, we say it every week. I think Bobby Wagner is going to be hugely important, especially if they are going to be throwing little screens, dump offs, because if they can get around the front four, the back seven have got a huge job to stuff those running backs in their tracks.
Yeah, it is quite a big deal. The receiving DVOA, which is a big deal, how measured how good a defense is, has us as 25th so far in the season in the league defending running backs, which is not good, especially when you got Mrs. Coleman and Freeman coming in. So I think it is linebackers for me, as it always is. It's an importance which has not escaped the attention of Pete Carroll, as he said this about Bobby and KJ.
They've really just kind of grown together. They're just like, almost like brothers, you know, and they have learned and matured in the league together. They've grown about the game of football together. They've just been tied at the hip, and they're both fantastic players and fantastic team guys and absolutely perfect characters on your team. And they're leaders, big playmakers, you know, consistent producers. They're everything we could hope for. They're great kids on the team.
Right, before we get into some true and false, a quick bounce back to last week with something I missed, amongst other things last week. Chris Boulding sent in a question. It was, where do you rate our starting running backs, tight ends, wide receivers in comparison to the rest of the league if you had to rank them? Adam, we'll start with Christian Michael, as he's RB1 currently. Where would you put him in the grand scheme of things in the league?
I'd probably put him in the second tier, if that allows me to not be that specific. But I think you've currently got David Johnson and Le'Veon Bell, who for my money are clearly the best they do. Maybe put Gurley in there, but his production and numbers don't necessarily suggest that at this stage, though he probably has got the talent. So maybe if Gurley's going to be in the second bracket, then Michael's maybe in the third bracket. But I don't know, I think it's quite a hard question across the board, because apart from Baldwin, who I think probably is one of the best in his position, you know, I'd rather have a team of guys in the second tier than what a lot of teams have, where you've got one amazing guy and the rest is just crap. So but yeah, I think Michael's probably top 10.
Well, that's higher than I thought you'd put him. Sean?
Well, Christian is, let's face it, he's still a work in progress. And so far, so good. To quote Adam, I think our offense is the sum of all its parts. And I'm more than happy with having those sort of B plus players completely across the board, all at very similar levels of experience and talent. Because if we haven't got that go-to guy, then guess what? It keeps the defense guessing. So I'm very happy. But Michael at this moment, again, possibly even third tier, We probably won't know where he sits until the end of the season.
Yeah, that's fair enough. For me, the thing is with the quarterbacks, there's something dubbed the Andy Dalton line, where you're either better than Andy Dalton or worse than Andy Dalton. And I think Christian Michael could be the Andy Dalton of running backs to a certain extent, because I think he would be slap bang in the middle of any depth chart you put up for running backs across the league. I think, as you said, Sean, I think you'll get a better read of him, of how he, where he stands at the end of the season, how he does for the next 2.5-3 months. But right now, I think he's in the lower half of starting running backs in the league, because he's got basically a month's worth of showing what he can do, really. Tight end, Jimmy Graham, Sean?
Well, I did look at some of the fantasy charts this week. Not that I do a fantasy team, as you guys know. And Jimmy ranged, depending on which fantasy competition you looked at, anything between 5th and 12th in the league, which I find incredible. And yes, there were some question marks at the start of the season. If this guy isn't top three at the moment, based on the last 2 weeks, then I don't know who is.
that's pretty spot on. Adam, Jimmy?
I'm going to go, certainly has the potential to be a top three tight end, but right now, because you don't know what, you know, we hope that he's completely healthy and we hope he's going to get the ball a lot, but for my money, you've got Gronkowski as a standalone, and then you've got Jordan Reed and Greg Olsen, who have just shown it a lot more than Graham has for the last year and a half. And then I put Graham just underneath that with the potential to surpass both of them.
Yeah, I think that's exactly how I'd line it up as well. I think Barnage is quite good in Cleveland, who could probably possibly push Jimmy and the two if he had a quarterback who stayed on the field for a full game. Who else is there? Tyler Alford. He's just never healthy, which is just a shame. But yeah, I think three behind Gronkowski, but in the top five, I think, is where Jimmy Graham is for tight ends. Wide receiver, you touched on it earlier, Adam, Doug.
Oh, sorry, I think we're Jermaine Kearse. Doug Baldwin's my man. He's always going to be my man. And so maybe I'm a bit biased, but there's not many guys in the league I would definitely swap him for. I think Antonio Brown and Odell Beckham are the only two guys in the league that I would definitely swap him for.
So,
and after that, no.
So you take Doug over Julio, then, would you?
Yeah, I would. I think from a reliability point of view, and from what this team is looking to do, I think what Baldwin offers us is probably more valuable as just an elite route runner than someone like Julio, who would be an amazing counterpoint to Doug, but not as a replacement.
Yeah, that's pretty well put. For me, I think Doug is, in terms of importance, is, as you say, I think he's third behind Odell and, well, probably fourth behind Julio, Odell and Antonio Brown. But in terms of how he stacks up against the rest, he's possibly 5 to 10. I could probably list off. I think AJ Green, obviously. I mean, Dez Bryant's my favourite non-Seahawk player in the league, I think, even though he's a bit of a tantrum every week. But yeah, I think the importance Doug brings to the team is immeasurable. But in terms of talent and all, not talent so much, but all the rest of it, I think he's a little lower down. Sean?
Yeah, just to tag something on the end of the Doug comment so far. I don't believe that any of the wide receivers that we're saying potentially are above Doug in the list bring the leadership to their teams that Doug does to ours. I think that's a huge compliment to the man and the way that he's developed over the last few years. So I think he brings a different type of mental capability to our team. And I don't think you can't measure that in stats. I think we mentioned something similar earlier on another point, but that's why I wouldn't swap him for anybody at this moment in time.
No, because the last few weeks, one word you haven't used alongside Odell Beckham is leader. You've heard a lot of you've heard a lot of others, but not leader is not one of them. So that's a pretty good point. Now, again, we are here with some true or false. Sean, as you're our guest, do you want to kick us off?
Well, thank you very much, Mr. Court. true or false, and hopefully in the same or similar vein to the last week's examples, although not specific to any divisions, could it be, with Dak Prescott leading the Cowboys, their year not just for the playoffs, but also a championship game?
False, because I think Dak Prescott's going to be benched in about 2 weeks when Tony Romo is healthy. I think that team is, I think, as much as I can't stand the bloke, Colin Cowherd summed it up pretty well, where it's the Dak and Dunk offense in Dallas. I think that's what it is. I think when Tony Romo comes back, Dez Bryant might be healthy by then. I think the offense is a lot more expanded than it is right now. It is very safe. It does help when you've got a talent like Ezekiel Elliott in the backfield, just making the impact he is. I don't think any running back has made the impact he's making so quickly into the NFL. But yeah, I think if Tony Romo continues what Dak says, but currently I don't think Dak Prescott will be the one leading them into the cold winter months. So no, and I think there's at least three teams better than them in the NFC and a couple teams better than them in the AFC. So for me, it's false. Adam?
I think the general point is false, but it wouldn't surprise me if Prescott played in the Cowboys' last game of the season, whenever that is, just because I don't think Tony Romo can get healthy again. I think he's too brittle. And, you know, it wasn't even that big a hit that Averill did him with. And he just crumpled, like, I don't know, it was like he was being held up by a force and someone clicked their fingers and he just collapsed. Mm-hmm. It didn't look natural, and I don't think his body's going to hold up to many more games. The second part of the question is, I agree with Stu, false, because I don't think that they're going to be good enough to knock off the best teams in the NFC.
No, I agree. For me, my true or false, the San Diego Chargers yet again blew another late lead. I think they said if they only played 57 minutes, they'd be 4-1 this year. Instead, they're 1-4, I believe. Phillip Rivers was caught after the holder fumbled the snap for the game-winning field goal. That the Chargers are the bad news bears. Are they true or false? They are the unluckiest team in the NFL, or is luck no part of it?
None whatsoever. No, this is down to coaching and mental toughness, as far as I'm concerned, and they don't possess it. I think we had a conversation not too long ago about Rivers as a quarterback, maybe past his best days. Certainly got a very strange throwing action. I just don't think it's luck. I think there is just something about the way the team that is coached that they just cannot see it through to the end.
Cool. As a superstitious man myself, I think there's definitely someone out there who, when they get a field goal, someone's nudged his mate and saying, yes, we've tied the game, and that has jinxed it for all eternity because the guy's fumbled it. I mean, ultimately, what is luck? I mean, you could say that it's unlucky that Melvin Gordon fumbles the ball and they turn it over and then they give up a touchdown, but technically that's just crap play, same as the hold. I mean, look, I can't think of any team that has been less fortunate than them. But as Sean said, there's obviously a mental block there somewhere that's not letting these guys get over the line. We've all seen it probably in our English football teams that we support. You know, you get into a rut and, ultimately it's not lucky that someone sticks one in the top corner from 25 yards against you to lose it for you in the last minute. You're just not good enough. It's a tough one. But there's no one less lucky, but it's also not that they're unlucky. Not that, that really answers anything.
Sit on that fence, you may. Adam?
Splinters.
Adam, true or false this week?
My true or false is that the Green Bay Packers need to develop some sort of offensive system beyond hoping Aaron Rodgers can make a magic play every time he gets the ball in hand.
Again, this is one of those where it's false to a certain degree, but it's true to a certain degree as well, because they are overly reliant on Aaron Rodgers being a wizard, but they are one of their main issues on our offensive side is how reliant they are on Aaron Rodgers being a wizard, and they look broken. They looked broken certain points of last year, And Roger's got all the, oh, it's because he's with a Hollywood actress and all that nonsense. But there's something that needs to be addressed, and McCarthy and Rogers appear to be too stubborn to address it to the betterment of the team. I think Randall Cobb has barely done anything for the last couple of years. Obviously, they lost Jordy Nelson last year, and it doesn't look that much different with him back on the field this year. So, it's a bit of both, really. But I think they need to do something, because their over-reliance on Rogers is not, clearly, it's not going to be in a division where they're now chasing the Vikings from afar. It needs to be done sooner rather than later. Yeah, maybe that answers this.
Absolutely true, I think. You know, Rogers is the marquee player, isn't he? He is the, other than Brady, the archetypal MVP, season in, season out. But if you look at any team, any roster, any squad, and you take away his weapons, not necessarily for injury, but out of form or just not healthy, he cannot do it all on his own, and they are a team that doesn't appear to have a plan B.
No, most definitely. So
Eddie Lacy's not making that team next year.
No.
He's not getting a contract.
No.
He's got Burger King written all over him next year.
No.
I was going to say, he's got Jacksonville Jaguars.
No, he's, as I say every week, it seems that the running back class coming through, there's a better Eddie Lacy probably two or three times over in the draft at all the seven rounds probably could get Eddie Lacy, and you can't. James Sachs isn't an NFL starting running back either, so yeah, I don't see Lacy being long for Wisconsin. But yeah, that's another true and false. Obviously, we said we're going to kind of try and do that every week if we can. Anything else catch your bye week eye this past week, Adam?
It was good to see a couple of our rivals lose. Certainly not going to complain at Philadelphia dropping a game, and definitely not going to complain about Carolina dropping another one. I was just about to say, if Aguayo gets the winning field goal against you, you got problems. But then I realised that we're playing them in a few weeks, and so I'd like that officially scrapped from the record, please. Minnesota looking good again, although I question the durability of that team going forward in the long run. And Tom Brady just looks sickeningly good, even against a bad team. They just look uncoverable for New England, and that's going to be a really tough one for us.
Yeah, Martez Bennett is an annoying acquisition for that team, because they were like this when they had Aaron Hernandez before he turned into Scarface. So to get that back again so soon is a scary proposition. Anything for you, Sean?
Well, again, it seems I'm in the habit of following Adam on some points.
wise move.
Yeah, still playing it safe, I think. It's some very strange results and most welcome results and losses that were completely unexpected. And I think the only other thing that I'd state is I'll start with a question first, because with Ross not being available, I'm not sure whether we have our catfish button available. So I am going to say nothing about Cam Newton at this moment. He is currently getting everything that he deserves.
So for people who might not be aware of, through Sean's several hundred posts on the matter, Adam to Jermaine Kearse is Cam Newton to Sean Wilson. Yeah, the winning smile has disappeared, hasn't it, Sean?
Oh, hopefully for a long
time. Well, he was going around on the Segway on Monday night.
Yeah, well, if only it generates some more ridiculous hats and a monocle and some fantastic loafers, because that sums the man up for me. So I'm more than happy if he continues on this streak.
I don't know, was something you wanted to bring up about practice squad sizes and the rest of it?
Yeah, so we were talking yesterday on Messenger or whatever, and discussing that. There was a very interesting discussion between Softy, who's a Seattle radio host. If you do ever need more of a Seattle fix, you can get all his shows on a podcast the next day. Discussing with Bob Condotta, who's a Seattle beat writer, I think it was Bob, about how it's just a bit silly that you've got all of these guys who are good enough maybe to make spring training and whatever. And then by the time the season comes in, you've got a 53-man roster and a 10-man practice squad, which leads to people like CJ Spiller just being picked up off their couch and then made to play in the NFL next Sunday. And with the money in the NFL and the fact that practice squad guys don't make too much money, is there any reason that the practice squad isn't expanded and you have at least one player position? Because that would seem to make a lot more sense. You coach these guys up, you can redshirt them for a following year, and then you keep more guys in the system.
Yeah, I think if they were to expand the practice squad, they would have to do something with the salary cap, because I think David Sue's the guy to chase up on that, but there is a certain quota of money set aside for the 10, I think it is, on practice squad. So if they were to expand it to how you say, they would have to do something, not drastic, because the salary cap is getting bigger by the year, no matter what they do. So yeah, but that would be something they certainly just. I completely agree. Also, another thing, to a lesser extent, I don't see why they have inactive lists on game day. I think if you got 53 players, that's more than you should have 53 active on a game day. Obviously, not all 53 will be healthy, but having 8 or 9 or whatever it is inactive for a game day is just a bit strange. And yet again, it just, there's rookies who can even see the field for a snap in garbage time, but they can't because they're inactive. Like, the betterment of the league long term will be something that the league probably won't look into, because they need to stop Antonio Brown twerking. So, but importance doesn't really stop. But yeah, next week then, we have a possible guest lined up. Just wait for confirmation from the man himself. A proper plug for that and who it is will come on the Facebook group and Twitter pages in the next day or so, hopefully. It is quite a cool one, so it should be a fun show. We'll look back at the Falcons game and preview Week 7 Sunday Night Football Showdown versus the David Johnson Cardinals, as they probably should be named right about now. And we're also, as always, looking to get you guys involved, as we say every week. So please, please do get in touch with questions, topics, drafting Seahawks names and positions, some true and false fodder too. It will all be greatly appreciated and help make this podcast stand out as a true representation of the UK Seahawkers. If you want to catch us, this is usually Summit Rosters, as he's not here, I'll take the reins. You can catch us on iTunes to search for the Pedestrian Podcast. You can subscribe on there and on Podbean. I don't know the URL for the Podbean. So yeah, if you haven't subscribed by now and you know someone who wants to get involved, push on to them and rate and review on all those means. You can follow the chapter on Twitter at Seahawkers UK. You can follow Ross Bell on Twitter at RossBell1984. Myself at Stu_Core. Adam, Sean, Twitter, Facebook.
Adam D. Nathan and Adam Nathan. And I know all my Facebook fans out there are eager to get I look forward to my Sunday spa again.
You certainly made some this weekend. Sean?
Yeah, very good. I don't know if I'm allowed to give up my Twitter handle. Is that correct? And the reason that I say that is that I've forgotten what it is. I can either edit, or you can continue to send me information by the Facebook group.
Yeah,
that's what a 6 PM fireball will do for you.
It's a long old day. can I just say also, absolute pleasure being here, guys. And I think I speak for all that it's an absolutely fantastic first-rate job that you're doing. So big applause to you all. I think, Stu, when we spoke earlier, I think you mentioned there was something like 26,000 people have now downloaded or listened to the pod over the weeks that it's been in place.
Yeah, from Hawaii to... from Hawaii to, is it Brazil or Argentina, said earlier? Yeah, so
that's not that big a distance, Stu. I hate to break it.
Yeah, you know what I mean, though. It's still wide from UK Seahawkers and stuff.
Absolutely phenomenal, so please keep up the good work.
Yeah, I'm sure speak for Adam, where we greatly appreciate that. So, but yeah, until next week, this is the Pedestrian Podcast. Thank you so much, Sean, for joining us. And let's go beat the Falcons.
Oh, Hawks.
That is going to do it. 12, they're bringing the trophy home. Your Seahawks, Super Bowl 48 champions.